episode 224.
You know, I've been doing this for 47 years, and I've made my share of mistakes. Hopefully, I learned from the most of them. And here's how I look at that. It's kind of like a baseball team. If a Major League Baseball team wins 100 games in a season, they're going to the playoffs, and they may very well win the World Series. However, that also means that they lost 62 games. That's a lot of games to lose. So, you know, success, you know, I think comes from learning from your mistakes. And that's the real key.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers. Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to the industry's premier podcast. Now, you're in for a special treat. Now, here in episode 224, hear from the dads, Joe Palermo, Gary Pawdy Sr., and Terry Beechler. So what's so special about this podcast is that their sons, Tom, Gary Jr., and Brett, were interviewed in the episode just before this one, episode 223. This is the bookend episode that will come full circle as it relates to the power of family businesses in the aftermarket. Hey, please keep in mind that this episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these interviews twice per week. Now, when you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Champion, Anco, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more, they're the parts tech trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. I'm having more personal enjoyment than is allowed connecting people that care about building a stronger automotive aftermarket, and I hope you benefit in big ways. It's my driving force to link people that need knowledge and want to affirm their strategies in a way that is easy to digest in your day-to-day life. Now, we're bringing like-minded people together who want to pay it forward, and don't forget, a rising tide lifts all ships. Hey, for this episode, you'll find the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E224. Hey, if you want a simple and easy way to enjoy the podcast on your mobile device, have you downloaded the special podcast app available on the iOS and Android App Store? Just search for Remarkable Results Radio Podcast, and within 2 minutes, you'll have all the episodes right at your fingertips. Now, if you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or the many other podcast sites, then stay right where you are. I'm grateful. Hey, a big RRR shout-out to Joe Mazur, Pedro L. Rivera Negron, Mike Morehouse, and Peter Whitcamp for their new Facebook connections, and to new LinkedIn connections, Len Logue, Mohammed Kaki, and John Villa. Hey, thanks to all. It's great to have you on board and connected. Now, here's the premise for today's episode 224 with the previous episode 223. Now, you get the fathers and the sons to share their world of the family business from each of their own separate perspectives. And as you figured, these are companion episodes. In the most recent episode, 223, three sons, Brett Beechler, Gary Pontius Jr., and Tom Palermo, joined me for an exclusive interview about the generational family businesses. Please don't miss that interview. It really does not matter what order you listen to these, 223 or 224, but the power of the podcast is to be sure that you listen to both, especially if you're a family business or work for one. This is great, powerful podcasting, perspectives from the trenches, if you will. I'm so grateful to the three sons for gathering their dads for this interview. We have dads Terry Beechler, Gary Pawdy Sr., and Joe Palermo. They were so honest, sincere, and transparent. And this is podcasting at its finest. You always get a ringside seat in all episodes, but this one and the son's interview, it brings an insider's perspective that has never been available before in the aftermarket as we get inside these family businesses. So many great talking points to share, like the traits that the dads feel their sons have of theirs, the dad's current role in the business, who's the bigger risk taker, how they see new technology, managing the numbers, the importance of communication and trust, and special advice for all family businesses. Now, many more key takeaways are just a moment away. Now, get ready for some strong family wisdom and advice from the dad's interview. Terry Beechler from Beechler's Vehicle Care and Repair, Gary Pontius Sr. from Toledo Auto Care, and Joe Palermo from Preferred Automotive Specialists. Now, here we go. Hey, welcome to our three dads. Yes, I interviewed the three sons in our previous episode, and I'm so excited to have you guys here. And it was, I'm not sure how convincing it was for your sons to convince you to come on and do this this interview, but I am honored to have you guys. Let me introduce everyone here. Joe Palermo, owner of Preferred Automotive Specialties, and his son Tom was with us in his own individual episode, episode 87. Glad to have you here, Joe. Gary Pontius Sr., Toledo Auto Care, celebrating their 100th anniversary. How exciting is that? His son was with us in episode 197, Gary Jr., and Terry Beechler is with us, second generation, from Beechler's Vehicle Care and Repair in Peoria, Illinois. And Brent was with us in episode 199. I started to think about the industry as a whole is a family business empire almost, all in these individual pieces. And with technology and succession plans going on and, you know, some of the things I talked to your sons about, I said, wouldn't it be cool if we could talk to your dads? And we all thought it was a great idea, and we didn't know we could sell it. So, obviously, the boys were able to sell it, and I'm so, so happy you're here. You know, one of the questions I have is, how many traits does your son have of yours? Gary?
Several, I would say. He's a very organized, structured. He's a hard worker, and you know, I'm not patting myself on the back, but those are traits that I have, and I see in him. He has a lot of fine traits that I don't have, and that's what makes it work well for us.
Joe, how many traits does Tom have?
He has quite a few of our traits are similar. In fact, sometimes employees are a little surprised where in a meeting, he'll finish my sentence or I'll finish his sentence. However, as the last speaker, he has traits that in some cases are better than mine. He's a little tougher on the employees, a little more structured, a little bit more disciplined. Not that I'm undisciplined, but he's a little bit more disciplined. And his technical capabilities are beyond mine because he's been trained in those areas from the time he was very, very young.
And I'll bet you haven't been to a technical class in 20 years, Joe.
I go to them, but implementation, because I don't work on cars and haven't worked on them for quite some time. Implement, you know, theory is one thing, and I'm up on that. It's the implementation that I'm not, but I've been teaching him about cars and whatnot when I was a mechanic since he was 7 years old. And then at some point, the teacher became the student.
Terry, how about you?
Freddie exhibits some of the same traits, probably a little bit on the hard-headed side. I know exactly where that comes from. Very strong-willed in certain areas. Other areas, I'm a technical science kind of a guy. Brett's more of a management type with not a strong automotive background, but he's surrounded, of course, by a very good crew of people here. Other characteristics, we're both into fitness. He much more so. He's very self-disciplined, more so than I am. I tend to jump into projects and not finish them, and he does a better job of cleaning up projects and finishing them. In some ways, complementary.
You know, my next question was, do you see a difference in your son's leadership style? And guess what? You just nailed it. You described not only about your son's traits, but how they lead. What is your status or your role in the company right now? Let me go back over to you, Joe. What are you doing right now?
I'm largely an administrative individual, and I handle the supervision of administration and sales. I work through those people to try to create a future pathway for the company and to try to develop sales. We do a lot of fleet work, you know, looking at competition and things of that nature. So I'm more or less the administrative head of the business, and Tom is the operating individual.
Are you comfortable in what you're currently doing right now? And is it that Tom has allowed you to do what you love to do?
That's exactly what it is. Tom's capabilities has allowed me over the last 20 years or so to move away from operations and into administration. And administration is so much more than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. There's receivables, payables, there's all the government regulations. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. So a lot of my job, really, in ways, is protecting the company, making sure that the receivable, you know, qualifying customers, making sure receivable, you know, I could go on and on.
Gary, your role, what are you doing right now that you love to do?
My role is similar to Joe's from the standpoint that I'm more administrative, less operational at this point, and I really liked that for many, many years. The buck stopped with me, and I was there 50 hours a week and just kind of did it all. You know, now Gary, you know, handles day-to-day operations, manages the employees. I stay on the administrative side more. I'm more of a consultation position, you know, with him, where I'm a sounding board. We bounce things off of each other and make decisions together, and very comfortable in the position that I'm in now. I like to say that I'm semi-retired, and that's a good thing. You know, I like that. A lot of the stress and pressure that I used to deal with, I no longer deal with. I can go into work with a smile and joke with the guys and not worry about Mrs. Brown's car being done by 3 o'clock, and that's a good thing.
I love what you said, semi-retired. Now, is that stage two retirement, semi-semi? And what happens when stage three?
Well, I'm not in a hurry to get to stage three. You know, I figure at least another 5 or 6 years to be, you know, reasonably active in the business. I'm comfortable in the position that I'm in, and I like it.
Terry, so your status, what are you doing now for the business?
It's administrative. We've got a convenience store, the auto service end of the operation, the car wash that's not high volume, and an office staff of about 2 people beyond me. Tons of stuff goes with the administrative end of it. I know Brett's been focused on the service end of the business, and we do work out succession. He's in a position, I don't think he appreciates what goes on the administrative side of it. It's a very heavy burden there with everything. As Tom mentioned, regulatory licenses, deal with professionals, tax issues, sales tax issues. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I don't think the average consumer or customer of yours realizes the amount of legislation and paperwork that goes on to run a business.
I usually work till 2 o'clock most days. I'm in here at 8 o'clock, and a lot of times we'll skip lunch, but I would transition out and retire. I'm somewhat part-time right now with a fair degree of freedom with respect to, you know, activities. Something comes up, I'm gone. And the place runs fine. I've got an excellent staff in the office. Brett does a great job running the service into the operation, and that allows that. We've got a long-time group of technicians.
Okay, so based on what Gary said about semi-retirement, are you in the semi-semi zone?
Probably semi. Add one to that. Usually out of here by 2 o'clock and here most days, virtually every day, Monday through Friday. I used to work Saturdays many years. Brett scheduled me off on Saturdays, which was nice after probably 40 years of that.
Oh, wait a minute, guys. Isn't that funny? Brent scheduled me off. I mean, I have to laugh. I'm sorry.
We used to rotate work every fourth Saturday, and you guys got me scheduled out of that. It's working out. I didn't go out kicking and screaming on that.
You know that 70% of professional technicians install Moog? Do you know who is best in class in engineering R&D? Do you know who holds 47 patents and has 28 dedicated engineers on staff? Yeah, Moog. You should know that 85% of Moog socket-style components are manufactured in North America, and that makes Moog best-in-class for manufacturing. And since 1966, every NASCAR championship has been won on Moog parts. But you knew that. I know why you install Moog. They solve your problems. Over the years, Moog has provided problem-solving innovations like a patented Preston cover plate, powdered metal gusher bearing technology, compression-loaded ball joints with a pre-installed integral dust boot, and vertical control arm bushings. You know why you install Moog. Enhanced durability, improved performance, and ease of installation. For more information, go to moogparts.com. Now you know. Being a top technician takes a lot of hard work, and you can't do it alone. I believe you would agree, vehicle technologies, repair procedures, and diagnostics are changing every year. That's where Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Guru Garage can help. The Garage Gurus program has been designed by and for technicians and offers the most comprehensive program of support tools in the industry. There's a nationwide network of Guru on-site training and technology centers where you can get hands-on training with the equipment and tools needed to solve real work-related challenges. And when you can't make it to on-site training, there's Gurus Online a 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of course options. Garage Gurus also helps where it matters most, on the job, in your shop. Their Gurus on the Go technology fleet, well, they bring the latest products and technology demos right to you. If you need a quick part lookup, the Gurus On Demand app gives you fast, easy, and accurate info. And when you need help with a technical issue, their bilingual ASE-certified Gurus On Call are ready to help. And this year, they're introducing the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program, which gets you points towards free gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts brands. It costs nothing to join, and you could start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com, learn all about the Garage Gurus program, and start earning points today. How important is communication and trust to generational leadership?
It's key, critical. I mean, if you don't have that kind of family trust, we're all in this together, kind of blood closeness, then that individual is really just another employee. And it's critical to move in the same direction. And developing that, I can see for some people can be a challenge. It's not a challenge for Tom and I. We're both on the same page, and I'm very thankful for that.
I echo that communication and trust. I don't know where you could put one above the other, but they're both just foundational. If you don't have good communication between the two of you, and you fully trust each other's judgment, decisions, and you're destined for problems for sure. And we agree on culture and ethics and all of the key components that make a successful small business. And that's just paramount.
Communication's a big deal. Brett and I have some difficulty with communications. He has a very strong tendency to operate autonomously without consulting, even some big ticket things. You know, get dropped in your lap, and you know the old adage, I don't think of myself as the boss, but don't blindside the boss. We're working through that stuff right now. I brought on a consultant who is a faculty member at Bradley University here in Peoria, who has a very good reputation for working through these management styles and that sort of thing to improve that situation.
And what I heard you all say is family, trust, communications. And does that get itself deeply ingrained in the culture of the business and the team that you have? You work hard to have that team feel like family.
We have several of our employees have come to work for us because, you know, we're a family business. They like to feel part of the family. We've got my sister works for us as well. She's retired as shuttle driving for us. Two or three of the employees call her Aunt Kathy. So we have a good family culture there, a good team culture, and a good cohesive group that way.
I'm sure, Joe, you're Italian, man. I can't imagine that, you know, you're probably having pasta every day at noon.
If you could see me completely, you'd know that I probably eat a little too much pasta. But I have members of the family that work for us. My wife, whose name, by the way, is Kathy, too. She works in the business on a part-time basis. My granddaughter, Gabby, she works there part-time in the summer. The key, really, to this kind of understanding is, what is the small business? Why does it exist for us? And it revolves around the family. It's really all about the well-being of the family, the ability to generate the kinds of appropriate income so the family is taken care of. You know, thankfully, we're in the automotive business. It was my granddaughter Gabby's 17th birthday. And so a few days ago, We surprised her with a convertible that we restored. It's not too old, but that we restored to, you know, like new condition. And it all those things go back to, you know, we did that ourselves. She didn't know what was happening, but we did that ourselves. And it was because of our abilities through the business.
Terry, is the culture inside the business all about family?
Yeah, to a fair extent. I wouldn't say it's all about family, but I have a brother that works here, has been here for a long time. Of course, Brett is here. My old line that goes way back when is no wives, no tow trucks. But often you see family situations where a wife is not involved in the business, is on the sidelines. I know my was in business with a brother of his, and the brothers, they were twins, got along just beautifully, but the wives are around the edges, chirping, and eventually they went separate ways in the business. But we've not had that problem there.
We have wives and tow trucks in business, but luckily for me, it's working out.
You know, I've been around. I've done some training gigs and so forth, but there are many businesses out there where wives are heavily involved and a real key person in business, but the humor side of it's always fun. I guess one of my feelings about family and people in business, you don't want employees thinking they're working for two bosses. That's problematic sometimes.
You know, that is a very powerful statement. And so how does that work inside of your place, Terry?
The people for whom Brett leads, if there's an issue, I usually take it up with Brett rather than dealing directly with the employee. Brett will have a tendency to work around the organizational structure and go straight in on something. And, you know, you get a reputation of being a micromanager doing that stuff and working for two bosses. You got to work through the organizational structure. It's probably an area where I'm strong and Brett's probably not so strong there.
You know, that's a great point, Gary. Do you have this one boss mentality at your place?
Yes and no. Because Gary handles the operations, he's the go-to person. Yeah, 90% of the time, you know, when there's any questions or issues, when it becomes administrative, healthcare issue, something on that line, they come to me. So I think we have a pretty good balance there. Sometimes maybe it gets a little crisscrossed, but I think we have a pretty good balance in that regard. And it's largely, I think, because 8-10 years ago, when I seen Gary was fully on board, engaged in training and becoming a real student of the industry, the management side of it and things, I just began backing out and allowing him to take that front role. And that's worked well for us. I don't step on toes. You know, I stand back, and if I have an issue or something to discuss, we do it privately, and it's not in front of the employees or anyone else.
Joe, for an example, if the decision that needed to be made and it was administrative, people would go to you. If it was operational, they would go to Tom. And then my next question, if that's the structure, when you guys have to make a decision on the company, a piece of equipment or a strategic move, then you probably do that together.
My method is I have two people that, well, one, my administrative and sales manager, she reports directly to me. She has a salesperson that reports directly to her. So in that sense, they report to me, and that's that chain of command. However, everyone else, oh, my wife included in that as well, but everyone else in operations, they report directly to the service manager who report if that problem cannot be solved at that level, it moves to the next level, which is Tom. And if then there's a problem that still exists, then they come to me and Tom and I resolve how we're going to handle the issue. So there's a military chain of command that we kind of use. And I tell my employees, my door is always open to you. I said, however, you need to follow the chain of command first.
Do all of your companies have an organizational chart and the people know it?
Yes.
The wives, you've mentioned wives, you know, and I asked your sons about, I said, so what's mom's role? That's what I asked them. And so now I could actually say, what are the wives' roles?
In my case, my wife, Kathleen, she works part-time, one day a week at the shop and probably a day or two at home administratively. She, before we got married, was an insurance broker. She's very familiar with insurance and all the aspects around that. And so she handles all those things and makes the autonomous decisions because she's the best and most educated person. And also what she does is some of the administrative things that we really don't want other employees to be involved in, such as payroll, profit and loss statements, you know, tax returns, which she doesn't do the tax returns, but she integrates with the with our CPA. So that's her role.
Terry, your wife's role?
None in the business. She places some of the artwork around here and does a very nice job of that.
Ah, very good. Got it. Gary?
My wife's my bookkeeper, has been for 30 plus years, and does a great job. She's a real numbers person. I'm a little less than of that. You know, to deal with numbers on a daily basis would probably drive me crazy, but she absolutely loves it. And so it's been a good thing for me because, you know, again, bookkeepers can do a lot of damage to your business if you're not careful sometimes. And I don't have to worry about that. She's meticulous. She does a good job. And she handles the, you know, QuickBooks financial statements, does a lot of the tax stuff. So it's worked out very well. She works, you know, 34, 35 hours a week. And sometimes when there's a load, she'll bring some home. But most of the time, you know, she keeps on top of things very well.
How does that mesh with semi-retirement?
Well, I'm more semi-retired than she is. You know, she's more of a workaholic than I am. I'm ready to back out. I'm ready to I probably get a little more in tune with Terry. I guess it's my personality. I'm still there every day. And I made a decision actually about 2 weeks ago to start leaving by 3 o'clock. And that's working out so-so. But I'm working more in that direction. And I like to get to where Terry is, where, you know, I'm 8 to 2. And if I got something else I want to do that day, I just don't go in at all. But I'm not there yet. Now, on the other hand, with her, you know, she's definitely more of a workaholic. She's more committed to the daily grind than what I guess I am. So
good. You know, the numbers, someone mentioned numbers, P&Ls. It's so important to really know. You know, years ago, if there was money in the checkbook, you were okay. It's completely different today. I know you share the numbers with your sons. You have to. They couldn't be in the role they're in. Do you spend a lot of time with your sons going over the P&L and the balance sheet?
I do with Tommy. Let me just say this about numbers. You know, there are people, and I used to be one of them, that would say, how could you be so into numbers? And I realized that a good number of years ago that numbers are really not numbers. They tell a story. They're a product of behavior. Those kind of conversations go on as my wife develops much of this and with me. And in addition to that, they go on with Tommy. It's a product of behavior, whether it's sales, gross profit, expenses. And so that's what we focus on. And we do set goals, and certain areas of the company have certain expense goals. And we tightly control that and look at it to a small degree on a daily basis, to a larger degree on a monthly basis.
And you all say your strengths and, you know, the things you love to do. Joe, Tom loves the numbers side of the business or the operations side more?
Tommy is more of an operator. He's not the kind of individual that's interested in delving into the numbers while the operation runs, but he wants to know about how those numbers relate to behavior.
Smart. And eventually someday he'll have to be he'll have to be into the total behavior piece. Like you say, oh, it's not right. What are we doing wrong?
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Got it. Thank you. Terry, you guys on the numbers?
Brett and I are limited in sharing of numbers, not by intent, but Brett's very focused on the service end of the operation. He's got good numbers, fair numbers to deal with from our shop management software. But the overall numbers of the whole business with the convenience store, gasoline operation, car wash, and that sort of thing, he's not shown an interest in. And that's or we want to take the time to spend time in the office reviewing those numbers. And that's one of the goals as we get on the road. It's something that should have happened. It's one of those generational things. Very focused on the service end of the numbers, but there's a much bigger picture there we need to deal with.
Got it. I understand. Gary?
Gary has become, over the last few years, very numbers-oriented. The P&L and the balance sheet, we don't spend a lot of time on. 10 or 12 years ago, I developed we call it our business monitor, and it's got KPIs on it that we fill this thing in every single day. And it's got all those numbers that need to be tracked regularly just to see where the business is at and how things are going. And Gary has embraced that thing deeply and keeps right on top of it. We've got two stores now. We purchased another store last December, and we got the same things set up for both locations and then the two together. So he's very, very much into those numbers and does a great job with that as well.
Guys, are your sons taking more risk than you did?
No, Tom's not a very a person who's really interested in taking big risks. We are taking some, but he's more interested in the operations. I'm kind of the risk-taking individual.
And so do you go with him, to him with your ideas, and does he buy in? He buys in?
Yes, he buys in. If it makes sense, he buys in, but I'm the one who's, you know, taking the risk.
And so what you're doing, though, is you're really conditioning and teaching him. I mean, you know, he's a young man still.
That's exactly right. Seeing how these things, and I don't take big risks. You know, we're not a company that has, you know, a lot of debt and stuff like that, but I'm the one who does that, and he's seeing how that plays itself out.
Terry, risks.
I'm not a big risk taker. I don't think Brett is. Sometimes I feel that he will take risks without knowing the whole picture behind it, considering the risk factors. You know, one very minor thing right now we're dealing with is, you know, fairly expensive training program for one of the advisors. We're talking $6,000 or $7,000, and just pay the money, just send the advisor. It's a non-cancelable contract, and I view that as a risk if the guy that's a service advisor decides he wants to pack up and leave 3 months down the road. Company is unprotected and holding the bag. Hey, appreciate the education. I'm out of here. That's the due diligence type thing rather than maybe risk.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, there's so many stories out there about that situation. If you don't train them and they stay, and if not, what's their commitment going to be, you know, if you do invest in them? And, you know, God, how many times people have said it really only takes a few months to get that money back because of, you know, obviously if you've selected the right training class, usually that stuff happens. So the ROI is what you care about. What's my return based on that investment? Gary, how about you?
I'm the risk taker more than what Gary is. Gary is more conservative that way than I am. It's been necessary to take risks, you know, when I bought the business and in growing the business over the years. And I take calculated risks. I guess I should qualify it by saying that. I don't just jump in and with both feet and not cautious about what I'm doing for sure. You know, Gary is always in agreement with, you know, the decisions that are made. And I can't say that, you know, probably the biggest risk we've taken lately is just buying that second shop, which that, again, was, I think, a very calculated risk. It's not something that, you know, we were very concerned about it succeeding or not. And he was on board. He's actually, his idea for growth exceeds mine. You know, I'm at a point in my career where I'm kind of cozy and comfortable you know, I'm not looking for 10 stores. He's young and ambitious, and he'd like to see more growth. So it seems like I probably still need to be the one who makes that final decision of risk and growth that way. But he's definitely wanting to expand more. So,
you know, our collective wisdom and our knowledge comes from having failed and learned from it. And it's been so many books written on failing forward. And with, you know, the dad in the business and having the son right there by your side, isn't a big role of you as leaders is to make sure there's a failure, because there wouldn't be that. You can't be there forever. If you're leaving a legacy with your son, there has to be this failing forward strategy that you as a leader bringing your son up in the business. Am I making sense? And do you agree with that?
Back 99-2000 in that area had a unique opportunity come our way for a second location, and it was in an area that we thought might be good, and it was very low risk, and we launched into it, and it went well for about 2 years. 9/11 came, and that place tanked. And we couldn't throw enough money at marketing or anything else to make it come back. And we had to ultimately shut everything back to the main store. So Gary saw that. You know, he saw that that challenge of trying to make something successful that just wasn't destined to be. And then there's been other things that's occurred, you know, over the years that has certainly, I think, indoctrinated him to that and kind of helped him to see that, you know, everything isn't always roses.
Got it. Joe, you were about to say?
Tommy has seen failure along with me. We've shared these failures. Some of them have been with with employees that we that we feel have let us down, that we put a lot of trust and faith in, and it hasn't worked out. We're currently looking for a bigger location. And
wait a minute, was that cough on purpose?
Well, no, but it's been a real it's been a real challenge for us in the area we're in. There's some very limited opportunities, and you know, I've been doing this for 47 years, and I've made my share of mistakes. Hopefully, I learned from the most of them. And here's how I look at that. It's kind of like a baseball team. If a Major League Baseball team wins 100 games in a season, they're going to the playoffs, and they may very well win the World Series. However, that also means that they lost 62 games. That's a lot of games to lose. Success, I think comes from learning from your mistakes, and that's the real key.
Thank you for that. Terry, failing forward.
I can't think of any significant failures that have happened to create a learning experience, certainly some minor things, but that's a fast way to learn for sure.
It sure is, isn't it? Thank you, guys. How often do you guys sit down and have your meetings? Is it monthly? Is it weekly? Is it daily that you mesh and talk about the business?
I can say with Tom and I, we speak on a daily basis, sometimes for 5 minutes, sometimes, for a half hour. But let me just go back to this failing for just a second. If the chemistry is correct in the relationship between the father and the son, the two top people, sometimes failure makes that relationship even more cohesive. So there's kind of a silver lining to the dark cloud.
I don't mean it to be a dark cloud, boy, but I'm glad you pointed that out, and you're right. You are absolutely right. Thank you. So, Joe, how you guys meet? You say almost daily, but nothing formal. Like we're going to go for breakfast every Friday at 7 o'clock.
No, none of that. The challenge is the wives don't like us talking extensively about business, when we're together outside of the business in a personal setting. But we still end up doing that a little bit. But that's not the only time we meet. It's pretty much every day. Depends on the circumstances.
One of my questions was going to be about Thanksgiving dinner.
We pretty much stay away from business at those times. But I would have to say that inevitably there's always 5 or 10 minutes, where Tom and I are talking together and just sharing whatever information.
Thank you so much, Joe. Gary, meetings?
Like Joe, daily, we're in communication and talk. We have begun over the last several months, actually, breakfast meetings once a week, typically Tuesday mornings. We've been meeting for breakfast and spend an hour and a half going over, issues or thoughts, ideas, planning, those kinds of things. And then the first of each month, we have a team meeting where we bring in, our team leaders as well as the other service advisors and have a sales meeting. And so we have a formal meeting then, and then he and I usually meet formally once a week, and then daily we're in communication. So Thanksgiving, I'm like Joe, how in the world do you not talk a little bit of business? But we do minimize it. We try to keep that stuff away because the wives do get a little bothered, especially if we would huddle in a corner and start comparing notes or something. And that's not a good thing in a family setting. But generally there is 5 or 10 minutes, where you'll talk a little bit of business. And that seems to be, the nature of a family business, especially with my wife as involved as she is. Her and I talk about it 24/7 almost. I mean, it's just always something that pops up that you'll talk a little something about. So, yeah.
Brett and I meet more or less crossing in the hallway. No formal time. We've discussed it, and it seems to fall through because of work schedules and demands of the front counter, that sort of thing. But things are discussed passing on all. I'd say we've got a weakness in our business in communication between the two of us. It's not uncommon in a generational business.
No, it isn't. Guys, you have been so transparent, so candid, so honest. Thank you. Thank you so much for all of that. When I think about technology today, autonomous car, the ADAS systems, and this fast-paced, incredible automotive world we live in, You guys staying close to that? You know, you put your crystal ball on and saying, are we, you know, me and the sun preparing for, you know, fixing the cars of the future? What are your perspectives on that?
At Preferred Automotive, Tom and I are very, very in sync in understanding what's going to happen, what we think will happen, and how we can benefit from it. Here's the thing about these autonomous cars. In my experience, when we went from leaded gasoline to unleaded gasoline, it took 12 years before leaded gasoline was no longer a viable product for service stations. Now, that situation will probably be at least that long because cars are lasting longer today. So if there are any technical advantage, say, for example, that the dealerships have or things of that nature, that's going to take quite a while to play itself out. And there's going to be a lot of time for us to be able to capitalize. There's certain things that just don't change. And the family business has a real competitive advantage if it behaves in a family type setting.
Great words, Joe. Thank you. Gary?
From a technical standpoint, you know, we certainly keep our techs in classes, reading material, keeping on top of what's coming out of Detroit. And so we stay on top of that way. Gary and I are neither real technical. We've never been mechanics, technicians. You know, we've always been around cars and always enjoyed cars, worked on our own and, you know, have always been in tune to all the systems and everything. But we've always been more on the management administrative side of things. We, looking forward, you know, recognize, you know, the industry is changing, you know, cars are changing. And I think we're positioning ourselves very well for that. And we're keeping abreast of what's going on. And we're servicing everything that's coming out. We're not shying away from any of the new technology and embrace it. You know, I'm very excited about the autonomous cars and self-driving cars, the autopilot. You know, I guess that's probably the one that I like the most. I still like to drive myself, but it'd be really nice to be able to sit on the expressway and, turn on the autopilot and drink coffee and just watch the car.
And jump in the back seat, read a book.
Yeah. Well, there's some aspects of it that are pretty, pretty neat, but,
my twist on autonomous cars, when they'll have it figured out when there's a big button on the dash that says, I'm drunk, take me home.
Let me just say something about vehicle change. When I first got into this business, vehicles really hadn't changed for 40 years. I mean, when you think about it, from 1925 to 1970, cars all had carburetors. They all had distributors. You know, they got better. They got much better over that period, but they basically were the same. Not very electronic, heavy mechanically. And over that period of time, since that period of time, when I got into the business, things started to constantly change. And there were doomsday people that were, oh, they're going to catalytic converters and pollution devices. They're going to ruin the car. Oh, these computers don't work. Oh, they're not going to be good. It's not. And oh, they're making radial tires. And now we're not going to sell as many tires or tune-ups. And it was on and on and on. And it's just a matter of keeping up with it. And here's the approach that Tom and I take. And here's one of the reasons why we're in sync. We both believe, and Tom wanted to come into this business when he was 7 years old. We both believe that this is no longer a trade. Automotive repair technology is not a trade. It's a practice. That it has to be looked at that. We are constantly training, constantly learning. Everything's changing and it never ends. And if you stay up with it, you're going to have a leg up.
I love it. It's a profession. That's what you're saying.
It's a practice, like a legal practice, like a medical practice, like an accounting practice. It's a practice, not a trade.
It used to be, you know, you fix the old cars. You knew that. The guy was a great mechanic. He wasn't so great. He'd just done the same job 100 times before. Now, if you're not starting off with a reference material in front of a computer, you're up a creek.
Well, yeah. And you know what?
That's where the practice things comes in.
That's absolutely right. And here's the difference. And a lot of, I know I'm getting off the subject, but I just want to mention this. Years ago, knowing what was wrong with the car was what was important. Today, that's not important anymore because you can't know. Knowing how to find out what's wrong, knowing how to find the answers, knowing where to look, that's the key.
That's correct.
People that are out of business today have never grasped that. And that takes training. And that's the definition, really, in a left-handed sense of a practice.
It's you're going to charge me to tell me what's wrong with the car? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And do you remember how difficult that was 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
The customers resisted that. And the reason why they resisted is for what I just mentioned.
Because back in the day, a technician mechanic at that time could listen to your car and know exactly what was wrong with it because they had been around him so long. They knew exactly if it was a timing thing, carburation. And today, you're right. Get out the rubber gloves and the white lab coat and the computer.
Now imagine how this conversation would have gone if, say, the fathers approached it in the old-fashioned manner. I mean, there would be revolts within the business, rightfully so. And we're both on the same page with this. You know, we both know this is a practice, and we've got to treat it as such.
I look at it as a practice, and I go to my doctor's office or offices. I pay attention to everything they do, how they organize the office, the language they use, and mirror that.
That's a great thought, Terry. I like that. If you're going to be a practice, you need to emulate one. And so, Doc, I've got this pain over here, and he's touching you in a place that has nothing to do with the where your pain is. And you're asking, so why are you doing that? He knows that there's some kind of relation to the size of your feet to the pain you have in your side.
In our place, I picked this up from medical people. They don't use the word diagnose. It's evaluate, for example. One word. Whole different twist on it. We evaluate and treat is standard medical jargon, and evaluate here and diagnose means you're going to charge a certain amount of money and you will have an answer.
Are you saying that the word diagnose is getting a bad rap?
We don't use it.
Wow, interesting. Great takeaway, guys. Woo, love it. So I have one more question for you, and I want you to just say to the dads that are out there that are looking at succession planning, that they have their children in the business, give them some advice.
Well, when it comes to succession planning, I would say start early. We're just beginning to do that, maybe a little late, but there's still plenty of time. And try to have the kind of cohesive relationship. Imagine yourself not there and how you're going to leave your son or daughter and what kind of people she's going to be surrounded with and can they be trusted. That and succession planning is, I think, the key.
Thank you, Joe. Terry, how about you?
Great accountant, great insurance guy, great attorney, great banker, maybe an outside business consultant or 20 group. I think all those pieces are important. I know I got involved probably in early 1990 with 20 groups. You reach a point where you stagnate if you're out there operating by yourself. And that input from various professionals and so forth, I think, is critically important to the long-term survival of the business.
Great advice. Thank you. Gary?
The same, the 20 groups, I think, are an important part of a succession plan. Being involved, you're not an island out there. And what we found in the 20 groups is you're getting a lot of very valuable information coast to coast and across the whole country. What's going on in the industry? Starting your succession planning early and planning it through structuring, your plan, your thoughts, how are things going to progress and change as you begin to move out and your son comes in or daughter. Certainly trying to be as thorough in your thoughts as you can be, along with communication. Communication is, again, I think foundational. You've got to communicate well. You've got to be able to let each other know where you're at, what's your thoughts, where are we going with this thing, and communicate well and plan and do it early.
Great advice. Thank you. Thank you, guys, for being here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. Wise words, as I would expect. Thank you, Joe Palermo from Preferred Automotive Specialties and Gary Pontius Sr. from Toledo Auto Care. And Terry Beechler, who was second generation, and your son Brent is third. Guys, just wonderful. Thanks for paying it forward here. Hey, aftermarketers, thank you for joining us. Now, I know this In Companion episode 223 with Terry, Gary, and Joe's sons will become top listen-to episodes, must-listens for aftermarket family businesses. Thank you again to Terry Beechler, Gary Pontius Sr., and Joe Palermo for their sincerity and really paying it forward for so many of us to learn from. Many of you know that family dynamics are so rewarding and can also have their challenges. However, if you make it work, the results are personally gratifying. The show notes for today's dad's interview can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E224. Hey, I'd love it if you'd share this episode with a friend. It is so easy. Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Or simply send this URL, remarkableresults.biz/E224. Send it to a friend via email. If you visit the show notes page, there are many ways to share. And if you're a subscriber to the Insider Newsletter, then just forward your newsletter to a friend. Bottom line, you're an important reason I bring this library of interviews, this treasure of powerful content. I hope you're profiting from wisdom and insights found in each episode, and I thank you for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time...